The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on Happy Sad Confused, directors Joe and Anthony Russo on returning to their roots at Slamdance and the latest on directing Avengers Infinity War. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy Sad Confused. This is a dispatch from Park City, Utah, guys. That's right. As I tape this, I am in the cold, cold, delicious snow of Park City. It's day three of Sundance as I sit here today. I'm sitting literally in front of a roaring fireplace at the lovely kind of condo that I'm in with a bunch of friends. You know, this is how Sundance is done. You just sort of like, you make do, you figure out a way, because everybody's just here for the movies. They're not necessarily here to like spread out. I'm sleeping on a couch tonight. It's not the, you know, it's a very nice place, I have to say, but it's not about the accommodations. It's about the movies and the folks you get to see here. And this has been a treat for me. This is my 12th consecutive Sundance Film Festival. Of course, Sammy sadly is not with me here for the festival, nor for the introduction. Apologies. I'll keep this brief so that we can get to the main event. Suffice it to say, you know, I'm seeing a lot of very cool movies that I'll detail in future shows. But while I was here, I felt like I had to catch up with at least a few people. So I'm recording a few podcasts here. This is the first of a few. And this is two guests for the price of one, a gentleman that I've never spoken to on the podcast. I've certainly caught up with for their various projects. These are maybe two unlikely people to be at the Sundance and Slamdance Film Festivals, Joe and Anthony Russo. Of course, nowadays they are best known for directing the last two Captain America films, and now directing Avengers Infinity War, plus the upcoming untitled fourth Avengers movie. So they're kind of ruling the roost over at Marvel right now. And the reason they're here in Park City, the reason I got a chance to catch up with them today, was that they got their big break here in Park City, not at Sundance, actually. I mean, for those that don't know, in addition to the Sundance Film Festival, which you guys have probably heard of, obviously started by Robert Redford and is, you know, notorious for launching the careers of Quentin Tarantino and Soderbergh and Robert Rodriguez, there's another festival here that is also very acclaimed and has launched many great filmmakers, including Christopher Nolan's first film was at Slamdance. And yes, Joe and Anthony Russo's first film was at Slamdance. It's kind of like the alternative film festival to Sundance. In the same space, smaller venues, the filmmakers are even more green, and the films maybe are even a little bit more weird. But it's a great festival in its own right. And Joe and Anthony Russo came back this Slamdance to be recognized for their work. They were given an award, and they also launched a fellowship to fund future filmmakers and kind of sponsor and mentor them. We talk a bunch about their beginnings in their film careers and why they feel like it's so important to kind of pay it forward and mentor other young filmmakers. And of course, we also got a chance to geek out a little bit, a fair amount, I should say, actually, about Avengers Infinity War and what we can expect in that one, and also the rumors floating around about what we're going to see in the fourth Avengers film. Will time travel be involved? Who knows? Will Captain Marvel be there? Who knows? I asked those questions, so stay tuned for their responses. These guys, I was saying to somebody earlier today, for guys that are directing the biggest films on the planet, they really have great heads on their shoulders. They're just they're film geeks, but they're also just very chill, cool guys. And I had a blast talking to them. This is an abbreviated podcast. I know you guys are used to hearing me talk for about 45 minutes to an hour with our guests. Here in the middle of Sundance and Slam Dance, it's just too frenetic and crazy. So this is like a 20-25 minute conversation, but we cover a lot of ground. And I think it's safe to say that hopefully around the time of Infinity War, we'll try to make it happen to have them in for a longer conversation. So without any further ado, I'm going to go to that conversation. I'll talk a little bit more about what's been going on here at the Sundance Film Festival, what I've been seeing in an upcoming podcast episode, some really cool conversations coming your way. And you know what I'm going to say before I toss to the conversation. Go to iTunes, review, rate, subscribe. The reviews in particular really help. And you guys, I've noticed that you guys have been starting to contribute more and more reviews, and they're very much appreciated. And it's not for me, it's for people to notice the podcast. The reviews help. So if you have a second, go over to iTunes and toss over a review about the show, and that would be much appreciated. Anyway, in return for that kindness, I give you this conversation with Joe and Anthony Russo coming back to Slam Dance 20 years later. Here it is. I've been welcomed into Joe and Anthony Russo's posh pad in Slam Dance. Good to see you guys.
Great to see you.
So this is exciting. I mean, I was asking you guys when the last time you were here was partially because really the reason you're here is you have an amazing history with Slam Dance. I would imagine, taking back 20 years, what where were you at in your lives? What did Slam Dance mean to you back then in terms of where you were at?
Let's see. We had just made our very first movie. We spent about 3 years making a feature film together in Cleveland, you know, on a super micro budget. It was the kind of experience where we were, you know, we had a few collaborators, but we were doing a lot of the work ourselves on the film. So we were basically learning how to make film while we made the film.
Right.
And we would, like, it took us 3 years because we'd make the film a little bit, and then we'd run out of money. We'd go back to work for a while, and then we'd, you know, pick the movie back up again. Long story short is, there's not a big filmmaking community in Cleveland, especially at that time. And so we were kind of like, you know, out in the wilderness. And so Slam Dance was a very important, that was kind of our first contact with the larger film world.
Yeah.
And it was a very important experience for us. And the fact that we found a road here was kind of a miracle. And then the fact that we found a road beyond here was kind of a miracle.
Yeah. And you guys found not only, you know, exposure here, but mentorship really came out of this festival too. That's fair to say, and none other than the great Steven Soderbergh. Yeah. And you're paying it forward. Obviously, you're back here this year, being honored, but also starting this kind of fellowship. From what I understand, right?
That's right. We were inspired by Soderbergh to make a film. There was a series of Cinderella stories that were occurring up here in Park City through Sundance in the late 80s, early 90s. Steven included Rodriguez, the
sure.
brothers McMullen. It was a series of filmmakers who had emerged out of Park City with suddenly very large careers ahead of them. And so we made our film. It was in the hopes to follow that path. And luckily, Steven Soderbergh walked into the screening of our movie and changed the trajectory of our careers. And we owe everything to him in that moment that he walked into the to our film at Slam Dance. So for us, this is a karmic debt we owe to the universe. We have to pay it back. And now we're in a position to start a fellowship. And it's going to be annual, and we're going to support a filmmaker and try to hold the door open for someone annually.
Yeah.
And try to return the favor to the filmmakers and to the universe that that Steven gave to us.
I mean, I would imagine, you know, you guys have obviously had so many exciting opportunities in the last 20 years, and the way your careers have, like, kind of evolved, like, no one could have predicted, I'm sure, including the two of you. That being said, I wonder, like, going back to the Slam Dance experience and getting to know Steven, like, does anything compare to those, like, first kind of, like, breaks, those first moments when, like, someone that you revere, like a Soderbergh, is willing to kind of validate you and say, let me take you to the next level and teach you some stuff?
Well, you know, for us, it was even more heightened than you would think, because that first movie that we made, Pieces, was a very unusual movie. It's a very odd movie, very experimental, very extreme in tone and style. It's not the kind of movie that appeals to a lot of people.
Right.
So there is a, you know, our, you know, we basically started that, our, the journey with that movie is when it was ready to show, we brought it to the independent feature film market in New York City in September. Basically they prep you at that market and they say, you know, people are here to buy films or they're here to program films at other festivals. People are going to walk out of your theater. Don't get offended. They're not here to watch the whole movie. So, you know, you get prepped. And anyway, our screening starts. We have a full theater at the Angelica. And by the end of this end of the screening, 2/3 of the theater is empty. And for, so the last third that are trickling out after the movie's over, one person stops. His name is John Fitzgerald. He's one of the founders of the Slam Dance Film Festival. He says, hey, I really dug your movie. I think you should apply to our festival. So we sort of have this shoestring save that like ends us getting us to Slam Dance. Yeah. And then we had a very similar experience here at Slam Dance. So we came into Park City. We came with a lot of family members and friends to promote the film and get people in the theater. We had two full screenings. And then Slam Dance was over. And it was, we didn't really have any response to the film, so, except for about a week after the festival when we got a call from Soderbergh. So, yeah, it was, you know, we can never state how important it was, those two events,
right.
You know, to find a road here to Slam Dance and then for Steven to make a connection with us and help provide a road forward from Slam Dance for us. I mean, it's, you know, we can't overstate it because there was basically nothing else going on.
Well, when you guys, you know, and you're very active in terms of producing, I know you just announced financing for another independent film yesterday, right? And then between that and the fellowship, you're interacting with a bunch of younger filmmakers that are coming into their own, trying to find their own path. I mean, are there go-to kind of like, you know, watchwords that you try to kind of instill in them or pitfalls that you're trying to tell them to avoid that you guys encountered along the way? What are like the initial conversations with like a young filmmaker that you see a germ of talent in that you want to guide in the right way?
I mean, it's a different landscape than when we made our film.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
We had to shoot on 16mm. Cameras were expensive. Film was expensive. You know, we had to ship it to New York, which was expensive to get developed. And I think after we shot our first movie, the negative sat in our refrigerator for
six months
while we tried to get another credit card to get the film developed. And then once we got it developed, we screened it on our garage wall.
Making movies in the 1880s?
Yes. We had
basically, and then the train came out of the screen, and everybody screamed.
When you use 1880s equipment, it's very cheap.
That's right.
This is crazy. We had to drive to New York City with a U-Haul truck and pick up a Steenbeck and drive it back to Cleveland. This weighs hundreds of pounds.
It wasn't a U-Haul. It was our cousin's van. We borrowed our
cousin's van.
Van.
Yeah. And then had to carry it up two flights of stairs with three of us. I mean, it took us hours to... I think we went a stair or two at a time. So it's a different landscape.
Yes.
You know, you have an iPhone now. Steven Soderbergh is shooting a horror film on an iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, you can present content for free. You have free distribution on YouTube or Vimeo. You can access viewers in a very different way than you can. So what we always encourage young filmmakers to do is shoot content. It's it's very cheap for you to do it. It's much easier than when we got into the business. And we've actually discovered a lot of talent on the internet over the last decade, including Donald Glover and T.J. Miller. So you know, there is a path forward,
right?
By doing good work and just getting your work seen.
I mean, you know, you allude to like the differences we're at versus 20 years ago, and you know, I've lived through this myself as just, you know, as a film geek, and it's just fascinating. I've been coming to Sundance and Slam Dance for 12 years now, and yeah, the landscape is crazy. I mean, like 80% of the great films here are gonna probably end up on Netflix or Amazon and barely get a theatrical distribution. And you guys have really done a great job of keeping your toe in independent film while making the most ginormous, you know, blockbuster entertainments known to man. I mean, I'm just curious, like, just headset-wise, where you're at, because you're obviously steeped in this, and you love film, and you love the theatrical experience. is it general optimism or pessimism, sort of where we're at and the theatrical experience for things that aren't necessarily shot on IMAX, like an Avengers movie? Like, we want to see the intimate dramas on screen too sometimes.
Everything changes, you know, and I think you have to embrace change. Change is compelling. I mean, I think, you know, we, of course, grew up going to the theater, and that was our experience of filmmaking. We, part of our story is, you know, we lived around the corner from a Cinematheque, and that's our backstory. That's how we learned about filmmaking, was watching a bunch of foreign films at a Cinematheque, the Cleveland Cinematheque. So, you know, but I do believe that, you know, I've got four kids, and the way that they absorb narrative is very different than the way that I did. And the content that they consume is very different. It's, there's different lengths. They're used to viewing things that, you know, my, you know, Vine's defunct now, but my daughter grew up on Vine. And those are 6-second narratives, pretty compelling and funny. So I think it's going to change, and it deserves to change. That's the whole point. You can only tell so many stories in a 2-hour cinematic structure, you know, before it becomes incredibly predictive. And I think we've reached a saturation point where we have so much content that it is predictive. And why Netflix and Amazon, you know, became so compelling over the last 2 years is that you're getting 10 episodes all at once. That's basically a 10-hour movie.
Right.
Right. So it's sort of a...
the novelistic approach
exactly.
storytelling.
And I can sit there on a Friday or Saturday and consume 10 hours of content.
Yeah.
And really, it's much more immersive than going to the theater and doing 2 hours of content. So... I think this is all good and very healthy. And frankly, you know, I'd say that the independent scene is probably more well-funded than it ever has been in its history.
There are more avenues now. There are more
For sure. And you can go to Netflix and Amazon and actually get a really unique movie made for a considerable budget.
Yeah.
You know, where in the 90s that would have been cobbled together through foreign sales and some, you know, crazy actor who was, you know, who was, you know, domestically interesting 15 years before your movie.
It'll be paid in cash.
In a brown paper bag.
Bills, exactly. Yeah.
So it's a...
Nicolas Cage is here. This means
it's a really unique environment, and we should embrace it.
Totally.
And you know, look for young filmmakers who are or storytellers who are going to help us move it forward in a way that's unexpected.
If you'll indulge me, you guys, I feel like you finished shooting, right? At least the principal photography of your two Avengers films, correct?
We actually fly out of here tonight to go to Atlanta to have our last day of shooting tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
Believe it or not.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah. Quite a journey this has been and will continue to be for a couple of years. Talk to me a little bit. The public at large got a chance to see the first trailer, which was, you know, ginormous, but also probably felt like the tip of the iceberg for you guys. Are you guys consciously working with marketing to kind of hold back a lot from the trailers and stuff? Like, I would think there's an embarrassment of riches, but you don't want to give it all away.
Yeah, it's a very hard line to walk. And we have, you know, Disney marketing is, they're amazing people, and we have a great relationship with them. So yeah, I mean, everybody has the same goal. You know, you want to protect the you know, that thrill that people have in the audience, hopefully will have in the audience when they sit through the movie for the first time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a difficult balance. We have a lot of internal conversations about what the right mix is, but for sure.
So, again, I'm not expecting like a big spoiler talk here, but we are getting like our first glimpses at some of the characters in different forms. You know, we're seeing Steve, that beard, got the big cheer at Comic-Con and got a big internet reaction again. Can you allude to a little bit about where we're going to find Steve Rogers in this one?
Yeah, he's. I think we have mentioned this recently, but you know, it's no surprise, and I think you'll see it in the trailers, that he's embracing the spirit of Nomad, and it was always our intent from the moment we got involved with that character to deconstruct him. That's what we like. It's what we find interesting. It's what Soderbergh responded to in our initial work. Is that, you know, we. When you look at Arrested Development or Community, we're constantly either deconstructing genre or
right.
tone or playing with, you know, we like to say it's like being a mad scientist. You get to play in a laboratory and experiment with directions to take narrative in. With the character called Captain America, you know, you have to address the concept of who he is, because his identity is tied to his country.
Right.
So we thought it would be a really compelling narrative if he got into conflict with his identity, with the country. So the notion, the path that he's following is the same path that we left him in at the end of Civil War, which is he's a character without a country.
Gotcha. You it's tough because like you obviously we're trying to avoid spoilers for Infinity War, let alone the second film that you've shot. And as you well know, like photos are out there and stuff, and there's a lot of conjecture out there. And I don't want to know everything, of course. I want to know some things, but I don't want to know everything. But I mean, how are you guys like, are you guys shooting like alts or like different kind of like, you know, fake scenes or fake deaths or anything like that? Just to like,
throw people off?
Yeah, just to hedge your bets.
No comment.
We're too tired to shoot anything that's not going in the movie.
Yeah, there's not enough time. There's not enough budget to see the scene where everybody kills each other. Has it been fun to you get a chance to depict Carol Danvers for the first time? It's been fun to work with Brie.
We may.
Is that not official?
Depicting Carol Danvers.
In theory, would that have been fun to do?
It's interesting when you get to bring a. It's interesting when you get to play with characters in this universe because you are dealing with actors who have been playing parts for, you know, almost a decade.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to bring new energy into the mix, especially when you're, you know, you're doing this massive mosaic of a story. So, you know, there will be surprises, of course, in these movies. We won't confirm.
Okay, fair enough.
We won't
confirm or deny
it. Confirm or deny it. But... yeah, there's certainly going to be some curveballs thrown at the audience.
Is there a timeline of when we're going to even know the title of the next Avengers film? Like, does that come right out of the release of Infinity War? Do you tee it up? Or?
It is certainly, you know, part of the concept of the title is that it's advancing the narrative. So we're going to sit on that until we feel the time is right.
Right.
When people have absorbed the first movie enough.
How do you feel about time travel as a device in film? Just curious, just a general question.
Big fan of big fan
future.
Of the technique. Yeah,
Back to the Future. So, you know,
right. Yeah. If done well, you don't want to abuse that power. But you guys, I mean, if I would trust anybody, I feel like I would trust you guys.
Look, there's. It's interesting because yes, there are photos that always leak, and then there's lots of conjecture about what those photos mean. Certainly, there is a 5-minute sequence in Civil War around a piece of technology that that was laid in for a very specific reason. So, if you go back and look at that film, you may get a hint as to a direction.
Okay. Yeah. So, does this mark the end in your eyes of working with Marvel? These two films, or are you open to more?
You know, our relationship with Marvel has been, you know, one of the strongest creative relationships we've had in our careers. We've, you know, we're really proud of the movies that we've been able to make with them, and we've had an amazing time doing it. I mean, we haven't talked about doing anything beyond these movies simply because we still have a mountain to climb with these two films. And the one thing we've always really admired about Kevin Feige and Marvel is they have a very, even though they're building an interconnected narrative through many, many films over many years, they have a very disciplined one movie at a time attitude as well, which I think is very, very helpful to like to the creative process of fashioning the individual film. And so, yeah, we're basically very focused on what we're doing now, but we would certainly be open to working with them.
What do you think about the sounds like Black Widow is actually finally getting some momentum?
It's crazy exciting. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we're very happy for that. I mean, it's such a rich, interesting character. There's so much to explore with a character whose history was as a villain. And I think that, you know, Scarlett does such a great job of playing that character, and people are so used to that character you forget the character's history.
Totally.
And so there's a lot of really compelling stories to tell about someone who has a dark past.
Just more general stuff outside of the Marvel universe, just as film fans, have you caught up on Last Jedi?
Have you seen Last Jedi yet?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
We love Rian Johnson as a filmmaker.
Big fans, yeah.
I tell you, when when we heard he was going to make that film, we sent an email to Disney saying it was, you know, couldn't ask for a better hire.
Oh my God.
As a Star Wars fan.
I felt like the whole film geek community was like, this is the right call.
It's interesting because he's a brilliant filmmaker, and the response has been really, really.
I'm fascinated. I myself love the movie, but it has been, I guess, nothing. I mean, you guys know this from the Marvel universe. These fans, like, it's. It's a religion.
They're tough, man. You can't please them all.
Well, it depends, though, on your age, too. I watched the movie with my 11-year-old daughter, who is she's very into serialized storytelling and novels primarily, but she loves the bigger story.
Yeah.
And she was just thrilled throughout the movie, just like making connections to the larger universe, Star Wars universe. And just to sit next to her and see that sense of discovery and excitement in her was an amazing experience.
I think the fault line is between new fans and old fans. It seems to be where it's lining up. And, you know, when you're dealing with a character like Luke Skywalker, historically maybe the most famous and potentially popular character in
that
history
personality over 30 years with people change. Right. Sorry, guys, people change. Things happen.
And so, you know, he took a lot of risks with the film.
Yeah.
You know? It's a very smart film with great transitions and shot beautifully. And,
totally.
You know, so we're very excited.
I heard a rumor that you guys were talked to about episode 9. Is that any truth to that?
Not at all. No. We're in the middle of these gargantuan movies, and I think Disney smartly thought that they should leave our focus on finishing these films. We still have to deliver the second Avengers movie, which occupies us through 2019. So we're kind of off the market for a while.
They'll be making these Star Wars movies for a long while. Was that a bucket list thing? Just as like, you know, the kid and you would.
It's always a bucket list. Yeah. I mean, I spent an entire, the day that Empire Strikes Back opened, I spent the entire day in the theater from 11 a.m. to 11 at night. And I just sat through screening after screening after screening. So it certainly has a high emotional value in our lives.
Yeah.
And last thing, we talked a little bit about the TV and the amazing. I mean, I find myself 10 series behind all the things I want to watch. I'm sure you guys are the same way, as busy as you are. Is there either something that you've loved or really respected recently, or something that you'd love to kind of like direct an episode in or just sort of dabble in?
I think some of the most compelling work is happening in television.
Yeah.
And it's staggering. Like, I can't get over the level of quality. I can't keep up with it. Filmmakers who we adore at the moment, who are doing work in the TV space, the Duffers are incredible. I thought Stranger Things was brilliant. It was a very unique combination of genre advancement and nostalgia at the same time. And I think Noah Hawley is just unbelievable. I mean, his pound for pound, his storytelling ability is just staggering, and I love watching anything that he does.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but like growing up, like I could never have imagined the complexity of like treating genre that someone like Noah Hawley is doing in television. It would have blown my mind to think that
it's unbelievable. And I think I don't know what it is, but it's the space that that as it's changing, it's evolving our level of understanding of narrative, and I think people are just getting uber sophisticated at it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the work that's being done by newer voices is highly sophisticated.
Work. Totally.
I mean, this is why it's hard to get depressed about the changing nature of cinema and indie cinema, because the new opportunities are just thrilling. And the work that's being done is amazing. And it'll just continue. I mean, the more opportunities people have to tell stories, the more great stories we're going to have. That's the way it goes.
That's good. We have to leave on a positive note at a beautiful festival like Slapdance and Sundance, right? Enjoy your time here. Congratulations on the honor. And I really respect you guys paying forward, what you got out of this festival 20 years ago. And good luck getting out of the snow and back to Atlanta, guys.
Thank appreciate you. It. Good
really
luck to you.
It.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
See you guys.
Thank you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.